Welcome to Crisis Management. I'm Alicia Sikirska. On today's episode, the highly contagious Delta variant is changing the game in the fight against COVID-19. We'll discuss what it could mean for governments as we go into the fall. And speaking of Delta, Delta Airlines is introducing a new policy that is going to see costs offloaded onto unvaccinated workers. Plus, the list of companies that are mandating vaccines for a return to the workplace is growing in Canada. We'll dig into what that means in the fight against COVID-19. Now, to get through all this, I am joined by Sean Spear. Sean is a fellow in residence at the Public Policy Forum. He previously served as senior economic advisor to Prime Minister Stephen Harper, and he's here to help us dig through the policy issues brought forward by COVID-19. Sean, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Alicia.
So let's kick things off with an update on the fight against COVID-19. This week, the province of BC reintroduced its mask mandate, meaning that people will have to once again wear a mask when in indoor public spaces, things like malls, grocery stores, and even public transit, regardless of vaccination status. Now, while 75% of eligible BC residents are fully vaccinated, the province's chief medical health officer, Bonnie Henry, said that number needs to be higher given the impact of the Delta variant. Now, it's been the driving force, this highly contagious variant, behind the increase in COVID-19 cases that we're seeing all across the country. And many are concerned that we're potentially going backwards and that a fourth wave is looming. So, Sean, as we exit the summer and start looking towards the fall, what are you watching for when it comes to the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, I think a lot of our viewers are investors or members of the business community. You know, in that regard, Alicia, one thing that I'm following is the back to work plans on the part of major employers. You know, I think a lot of companies were anticipating that they could return to something like normal activities, including having employees back in offices, you know, sometime this fall. I think as governments have reversed the withdrawal of some of the public health restrictions, we're similarly seeing businesses push off their back to work dates. A friend of mine works at Teneo, the large global public affairs firm, and they've been tracking back to work plans for major employers, not just in Canada, but around the world. And it sounds like increasingly companies are now thinking January 2022 will be when back to work plans can be kind of fully operationalized. So that's a long way of saying just as important as governments are when it comes to some of these different public health restrictions, I think we're increasingly hearing and seeing businesses in the business community similarly kind of pump the brakes on getting back to normal. So that's, I think, a sign for the Canadian public more generally that plans that we'd be beyond the pandemic come this fall may have been premature.
Mm-hmm. There was actually a survey released earlier this month, a Léger poll that found fewer Canadians think that the worst of the pandemic is behind us, that essentially people are growing more and more concerned about a potential fourth wave. And I actually worked on a story this week about an ADP Canada survey about that return to work. And 60% of those surveyed, the businesses had communicated some kind of plan, but that still leaves 40% of employers not knowing, or employees not knowing when exactly they'll go back to work and what that would potentially look like. So I think you're right in that September was supposed to be this big time for a return to work, but the Delta variant has definitely thrown that those plans perhaps off course. When it comes to BC reintroducing the mask mandate, do you think there's much appetite among the public to go back into lockdown, to see these kind of rules being put back into place once again, particularly after, you know, with vaccine rates going up? How do governments kind of begin to manage this, and what options do they have?
It's a great question. I think one kind of social tension or social division that we're going to see more and more of in Canada is between those who are vaccinated and those who are unvaccinated. I mean, let's be kind of blunt here. The reason that we're contemplating the reintroduction of some of these public health restrictions is because we haven't gotten to where we need to be on vaccines. You mentioned BC's at 75%. I've seen data that says nationwide, we're closer to about 2/3 of Canadians that have been vaccinated. So for all of the attention paid to the lack of progress on vaccines in the US, the truth is we seem to be having some issues in Canada. We were averaging about 500,000 vaccinations per week. It sounds like that's down to something like 100,000 in recent weeks. So I think, if we see a wave of the reintroduction of public health restrictions, Alicia, I think you're going to see the emergence of real tensions in Canada between those who are vaccinated, who, have followed the rules and done what public officials have asked of us, and those who haven't, and in so doing, are imposing real costs and real burdens on the two-thirds or more who've been vaccinated. So that's something I think policymakers are going to have to grapple with. I think it could become quite an unhealthy tension, and one that strikes me as sort of unsustainable in a way. And that's why I think we'll see kind of increasing steps on the part of policymakers. They've been using carrots mostly to try to encourage unvaccinated Canadians to get vaccinated. I think we're going to increasingly see the use of sticks in the form of vaccine mandates and even growing support for vaccine. I think, pardon me, I mentioned vaccine passports, even growing support for vaccine mandates if the situation doesn't change.
Well, I think actually an example of this stick is this next story. Delta Airlines announced this week that it will soon start charging employees $200 a month if they are unvaccinated. CEO Ed Bastian said in a note to employees that those that are unvaccinated and on the airline's healthcare plan will be charged an additional $200 a month. And that's because the hospital stays for employees who have had COVID-19 have cost the company a lot of money. They said that it's approximately $50,000 a person. So here's what Bastian said in a memo to employees. The surcharge will be necessary to address the financial risk the decision to not vaccinate is creating for our company. In recent weeks, since the rise of the Delta variant, all Delta employees have been hospitalized with COVID, were not fully vaccinated. So it's interesting that Delta is choosing here to offload the costs, that increased costs that they're facing through their health and insurance plans, onto unvaccinated workers. Sean, what do you make of this approach?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, this is a function of the American system of healthcare, of course, where so many Americans are insured through their employer. But the same principle applies in Canada, of course. The healthcare system collectively will bear the cost of the choices that the unvaccinated have made, and I think that will contribute to this tension and division that I mentioned earlier. Just one other aspect of what could become, I think, quite how would I put it? Quite a tense divide across our country, even within some companies in this case, but households and families as well. I think a lot of us have put up with all of these public health restrictions and so on, but if we're in effect held captive by the one-third that hasn't gone out and gotten themselves vaccinated, in spite of the fact that we now have sufficient supply for everyone to be vaccinated, I just think it becomes kind of unsustainable from a political and social and in this case corporate point of view.
And I mean, you're definitely right in that the situation between the two healthcare systems is very different. But do you think this is something similar approaches that we could potentially see that with companies in Canada offloading those costs onto potentially unvaccinated workers? Is that something you think companies may be considering in some form?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, speak in general terms, I think we're going to have to increasingly have different rules for people who are vaccinated and different rules for people who are unvaccinated. That would involve one's ability to participate in the economy and society. And it may, at the kind of corporate level, and we're increasingly see this, mean that those who choose to be unvaccinated, could find themselves either not being able to work in the office or even faced with job insecurity as a result. The choice not to be vaccinated has kind of collective effects, and I think what we're seeing in this case with Delta is trying to ensure that they also have individual effects, that the choices that these people are making need to be internalized. Not just internalized by them as opposed to externalized to the rest of us. And I think that's important. It's the only way at this stage, after months of using carrots, it seems to me, that we're going to get to this kind of durable, persistent share of the population, not just in the United States. I mean, I think this is the crucial point. As you mentioned, we still have something around 25% to one third of Canadians that haven't got vaccinated. That's going to stop us from opening up our economy and society and getting back to normal unless governments and increasingly businesses are prepared to take steps like this.
So let's talk about one of those steps that's being taken. I'm glad you brought this up. But before the federal election was called, the Liberals announced they would be making COVID-19 vaccines mandatory for those working in federally regulated industries. And since then, many companies have actually announced that they will require employees be fully vaccinated before returning to the office. Canada's big five banks have all mandated vaccines for employees, although what happens to those who remain unvaccinated at each bank is a bit unclear. BMO and TD have said there will be additional measures for unvaccinated employees, including weekly testing, mandatory masking, and a learning course about the benefits of vaccination. Yesterday, Rogers was also part of it, and then Air Canada said it would require all employees be fully vaccinated and that those who are not vaccinated will face termination or be sent on unpaid leave. So, Sean, it seems like many of Canada's biggest companies are on board with vaccine mandates. What do you think this shows about the impact of that mix between a government mandate and then companies moving forward with their own vaccine policy?
Well, bear with me because this is a bit wonky, but I think it's important for viewers to understand. The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms applies to governments. The obligation under the Charter is the protection of individual rights from government action. The Charter doesn't apply to non-governmental actors in our economy and society. So, I've always been a bit dubious about vaccine mandates on the part of governments, Alicia, on this show. I think, not only does it make me just somewhat kind of apprehensive, kind of intellectually, I think there are the real potential that they wouldn't stand up to judicial scrutiny, that charter protections, for instance, for religious liberty, could be contravened in the event of a government vaccine mandate. That doesn't apply to businesses. So in some ways, I think, what these corporate mandates represent is a kind of workaround, the charter, if a sufficient number of companies impose mandates like this, we will have, for all intents and purposes, vaccine mandates in our country that are, basically charter compliant, that aren't coming down from governments, but are capturing a kind of sufficient number of Canadians that it's, for all intents and purposes, opposing a vaccine mandate nationally. And I don't think that's such a bad idea. For some reason, at that kind of intellectual level I mentioned earlier, I don't have the same misgivings or apprehensions, because, of course, at least in theory, people can leave these employers if they, if it's a matter of principle for them, which is not the case when it comes down from the government. So I guess just it's a long way of saying I think these are useful steps, and I think your instinct is right. We're going to see more and more of them, given that it's more unlikely to see government vaccine mandates, at least in the foreseeable future.
Do you think these companies would have made these decisions without the government issuing its kind of mandate for federally regulated industries? The big banks are obviously fall into that category. So does Air Canada and Rogers as well as a telecom. Do you think they would have done it themselves, or has this helped push them in that direction that perhaps they were going to get to anyways?
It's a great question. My instinct, for what it's worth, is that we probably would have seen them anyways. And it comes back to something I said earlier. It's just sort of unsustainable for one quarter or one third of the population, to, in effect, hold 65% or even higher captive. And think about that in a workplace. If, the people around you are unvaccinated, and threaten your health, I just think that would have been unsustainable to permit that within these companies. So I think it's it's possible, no doubt, that the government announcement may have accelerated these decisions. But I think you would have, from a kind of risk management perspective, seen companies make these types of announcements to give protection and support to vaccinated workers within their workforce, to give them the confidence that they need to come back to work.
Yes, and it does seem like businesses are the ones that are kind of leading the way here. Does that surprise you, or is that kind of the way we need to go here?
Well, I mentioned earlier that there's this kind of particularity around the application of the charter. So that, explains part of the reason we've seen businesses move in ways that governments haven't. But I also just think, especially for large employers, particularly ones that are unionized, it just seems sort of unsustainable to enable or permit within their workforces unvaccinated workers to put vaccinated workers at risk. And better than anyone if there's one thing that is common across Canada's business community, it's kind of an inherent conservatism, an aversion to risk. And so for that reason, I think it was sort of inevitable that we were going to see something like this, particularly from the federally regulated industries, which tend to be the most conservative of Canada's business community.
Oh, most definitely. And sticking with our final kind of vaccine-related topic, this is something we've also talked about. Some provinces, as we've mentioned, like Ontario, Alberta, and Saskatchewan, have chosen not to issue proof of vaccination systems in the way that Quebec is going to as of September 1st, which has led to some businesses taking matters into their own hands. To make things easier for those businesses, the Ontario Chamber of Commerce has actually issued a proof of vaccination framework to help these companies that are adopting their own systems in the absence of a provincial one. Chamber of Commerce CEO Rocco Rossi said a number of businesses, organizations, associations, unions, and post-secondary institutions have already implemented their own proof of vaccination systems. And so the framework is meant to help those groups implement their own programs with confidence and making sure it pays attention and touches on things like privacy in an adequate way. So John, given that groups are having to step in and provide this kind of framework, I mean, are there risks here for the provinces not going forward with their own proof of vaccination systems?
That's a great question, Alicia. I'm not sure I would frame it as a risk necessarily. Let me start by saying I think it's stupid that these provinces are resisting the implementation of vaccine passports. I mentioned earlier that I have some kind of intellectual apprehensions to mandates. I don't have any of those apprehensions with respect to passports. I think they're just a sensible policy to help businesses, post-secondary institutions, other institutions in our society be able to distinguish between vaccinated workers, unvaccinated workers, vaccinated customers and unvaccinated customers, students and so on and so forth. And I think that would be crucial for our economy and society to function as long as we have this kind of persistent, durable share that for various reasons is going unvaccinated. So, my bet, if I had to place a bet, is that we'll ultimately see those recalcitrant provinces move ahead with passports, especially once they're adopted in Quebec and Manitoba and elsewhere, and we see that how effective they are at addressing this challenge that we've been discussing today between vaccinated and unvaccinated Canadians. But in the meantime, I like what the Ontario Chamber of Commerce is doing here. I think it's a valuable service for its members, who have been being placed in the uncomfortable position of having to make these judgments absent a government policy, and do so in a way that it's consistent, that it's standardized, that it avoids or minimizes the risk that they're accused of being discriminatory or any other number of risks associated with being on the kind of front lines of having to make these calls. So I think bad on governments for resisting calls for vaccine passports, but good on the Ontario Chamber of Commerce and others who are trying to help businesses and other institutions in our society navigate these issues.
Yeah, and to take things back to where we started the conversation about the Delta variant, I think we'll see how governments decide to respond, especially if we start seeing a spike in cases and if there are questions about lockdowns, how particularly the provinces that don't have these proof of vaccination systems in place, how they decide to respond in light of that. But Sean, I want to take things back to our conversation about the banks. This week we saw Canada's big banks release earnings that featured some hefty profits, kind of as per usual. At the same time, Liberal Party leader Justin Trudeau pledged to hike corporate taxes on Canada's big banks and insurance companies. The tax rate would increase 3 percentage points, so from 15% to 18%, and it would only apply to companies making profits of more than $1 billion. Now, Trudeau also announced plans to start something called a Canada Recovery Dividend to help achieve the party's housing plan. Here's what Trudeau had to say about the proposal.
Because you sacrificed, because you saved, big banks got a windfall. So as we rebuild, we're going to ask big financial institutions to pay a little back, to pay a little more, so that we can do more for you. And in particular, so that we can help you own your home and so own your future.
Now, it's a bit unclear how the Canada Recovery Dividend part of this plan will work, but we've already seen reaction from the banking sector. A group representing the banking industry responded saying the policy would be detrimental to shareholders and that Canadian banks are already among the largest taxpayers in Canada. Now, Jean, looking at this as a policy tool, what do you make of it? Is this an effective way for the Liberals to achieve that goal when it comes to the pandemic recovery?
Well, I would say two things. I mean, if the goal is to generate more revenue, it strikes me as an effective tool in the sense that these companies are domiciled in Canada. You know, they are not generally kind of globalized companies. There's not a risk of capital flight as there may be in other sectors. So, you know, if you're looking to generate revenue, introducing a tax or a surtax on financial institutions will probably generate the revenue that the government wants, which you may not, you couldn't say necessarily in other parts of the economy where businesses might respond by shifting profits overseas or actually moving operations. So that's one way to answer your question. The second way I would answer it, Alicia, is I tried to think yesterday of a case where we have punitive taxes on particular sectors. And I can't think of any. There are some cases where we have preferential tax rates on a sector basis. So, for instance, the government of Ontario charges a slightly lower tax rate for the manufacturing sector. We also, of course, have preferential tax rates in Canada for small businesses. But I can't think of another case where we impose a higher tax rate than the general corporate tax rate on particular sectors or particular companies. So just as a kind of matter of tax policy, the idea that you would single out a particular industry or particular firms strikes me as odd. It kind of fails the basic tax principle of equity or horizontal or vertical equity, the idea that you know, everyone ought to be treated essentially the same. I guess just the last thing, I can't miss the opportunity to make a kind of small p political observation, which is, you know, the Liberal Party is competing with the New Democratic Party for progressive voters, and you know, it seems to me that a punitive tax targeting financial institutions is part of an overall political strategy to appeal to progressive voters, and I suppose it will leave it to political pundits to determine whether it may or may not be effective in that way. But as a matter of tax policy, it does strike me as an odd choice.
Yeah, I think that idea you heard Trudeau off the top there saying, you know, the banks did so well because you saved and Canadians were the ones that, you know, helped them in, when it came to boosting profits. And so this is kind of, it seemed like the argument is sharing the wealth, given that they did so well through the pandemic. Do you think that's a fair way to approach this recovery I guess dealing with how they did through the pandemic?
I mean, I suppose I understand the kind of conceptual argument, and I should emphasize defending big banks is never an easy task. But yeah, it just strikes me as odd. There are other sectors, other businesses that have performed extraordinarily well over the course of the pandemic, and they're not being subject to these surtaxes. The other thing, of course, is that the banks in particular have played a pretty crucial role in carrying out some of the government's emergency pandemic policies, including, for instance, the infusion of cash into small businesses. So, the idea that the big banks were not a kind of overall partner in the pandemic response is, again, just strikes me as odd. But we're in an election campaign, and it's not uncommon for odd things to come up, and this just happens to be one of them.
Yeah, actually, the banks were the ones that were running one of the marquee loan programs for businesses, the Canada Business Account. That was all done through the banks. And so they have been, you're right, close partners through all this. Do you see any? I know that the Canadian banking sector is highly regulated. Do you see any potential unintended consequences of this tax hike? We often hear about companies just fleeing to other jurisdictions. Banks can't do that in Canada, obviously, but they do a lot of business in places like the US. Is there risk here? Are there potential unintended consequences of this policy?
I think to the extent they are, Alicia, they'll be sort of unseen. There's sort of opportunity costs that will come with a greater share of profits going to government as opposed to other activities, whether it's whether it's capital investment within the banks themselves, whether it's less resources dedicated to kind of philanthropic activities, or whether it results in smaller dividends for shareholders. As I say, no one is going to kind of weep on behalf of the banks. But it's just a sort of axiom that any policy produces a response. Sometimes those responses are large and seen, and sometimes they're more unseen. I suspect that'll be the case here. But make no mistake, there will be consequences from this policy, and I guess we'll have to wait for over time to see if it's ultimately implemented and what those consequences may be.
We'll definitely be keeping an eye on that. Sean, thank you so much for the conversation.
As always, thank you.
Now, if you want to rewatch this episode or get more news about the coronavirus pandemic, please visit the Yahoo Finance Canada website. For more bonus content, make sure you check out our podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you have any questions for Sean or feedback about the show, please feel free to email me. I'm at alicia@yahoofinance.com. Thanks for watching.